Let's be honest. It's a little troubling, I know. I sense your tension. Psalm 42 began our service following Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Troubled waters. Psalm 42 is honest. In fact, we can call it brutally honest. It is a passage that emerges out of real life. It begins beautifully enough, as a deer pines for streams of water, O God, so my soul longs for you. And most of us in our cleaned up church life, we stop with that because it's comfortable. But if you listen carefully, it continues. Oh, my soul, why are you disquieted in me? It continues. God, where are you? Why am I alone? Why do my enemies taunt me? Why is life so hard? Why am I struggling? Why am I so sad? So let's be honest. The Bible is brutally honest about how hard life can be sometimes. Now, we come to church and we hear people's cell phones going off, and we're reminded, yeah, lots of stuff is going on. Things are really confusing and very complex, but life is good and beautiful and everybody should smile. There's a little button on the side of the phone. So let's be honest. When the Bible gives us permission to tell the truth about how hard life is, we should help one another do that. Richard Rohr, some of you know and appreciate, Richard Rohr says that pain that is not transformed is pain that will be transmitted. Pain that is not transformed is pain that will be transmitted. When people, maybe they have the best intentions, but they make us feel small, it may just be they are dealing with pain that has not been transformed, and we are the recipients of their transmission of their pain. In the brutal honesty of the Bible, there is this overarching theme that there's somehow, in the honesty of telling the truth, that life can be very hard sometimes, that there's a sense of sacred memory that emerges. Part of the sacred memory that seems to come out in Psalm 42 that seems to be at least a partial balm for the pain that the psalmist is feeling is a memory of having been at the temple singing. You heard the power of the words a few moments ago that our song sang, when I sing, I'm free. There's something incredibly powerful about the ability to sing, especially with other people, to unite this uncommonly incredible instrument called the human voice with other people. To make melody and harmony is a gift, and it can be so healing. And in the case of the psalmist, in the midst of the pain he was feeling, there was a sense of sacred memory that allowed at least for some partial freeing. I remember going with that throng to the temple, singing in the midst of music. And yet I say, soul, why are you so disquieted within me? I remember the first church that I pastored years ago, Gene came to me And she had kind of a sad smile, and she said, "Well, I've done it." I said, "Done what?" She said, "I burned them." "Burned what?" "All my journals." She said, "I just turned 70 years old, and I'm terrified that someone will read what I've written." And listen, and they will see how weak and fragile my life has been. How tragic that somehow in the life of faith we have given off the message that to tell the truth about our struggles is a wrong, bad thing. When in fact it's exactly what the Bible does and calls on us to do. Deep calls unto deep. And if you cannot share your hurts in a sanctuary that is a safe place, we've got problems. Let's be honest, brutally honest, and participate together in the sacred memory where somebody somewhere along the way in the history of our faith had the wisdom to say, "This journal, we now know as Psalm 42, needs to be heard by the people of God. We need to keep this as a sacred collection where folks like me have permission to tell the truth and be honest about sometimes life is hard. Sometimes we feel left out. Sometimes we are ashamed. And though we shouldn't be, we're human, and we stumble into it. And yet still emerging out of this Psalm 42, this brutal honesty, this sacred memory, there's also a resilient hope. Notice there is no real resolution in this psalm. In the brutal honesty of the way this psalmist expresses feelings, there's no, "I'm so glad I feel better now." The psalm concludes with, "I will hope." It's as though his teeth are clenched and his cheeks are tear-stained. "I'm still going to hope, no matter what. I'm still going to hope." Some of you remember and are familiar with John O'Donohue, who died a few years back, a great Irish poet that the world over people loved the brutal honesty of his poetry. And David White, also an Irish poet, was best friends with John O'Donohue. He gave an expression similar to Psalm 42 in unveiling his deep sadness in these words, "And the flutter in the chest, that memory of you once here on this same road, sitting with me as we looked with almost the selfsame eyes and thoughts, waiting for morning and the dawn glitter of the new day. But for now, we drive in a form of half-lit mutual forgiveness. Me forgiving you for going, for dying. You forgiving me, still alive in this continuing wonder." Emerging out of Psalm 42 is a similar kind of, within the brutal honesty and the sacred memory, there is this resilient hope. "I am not going to give up." It's not spoken explicitly here, but surrounding Psalm 42, there is a hint in Psalm 42, but surrounding this passage and following, the psalmist later talks about the final piece of the puzzle that can keep us sane in all the messiness that we experience. And that is what in Psalm 103 also tells the truth. where in a similar vein to Psalm 42, the psalmist talks about how fragile life is. The flowers of the field bloom for a day. The wind blows and they're gone. And the earth remembers them no more. In the same way, such is human life, except the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting unto everlasting. And there is the discovery in this human journey of an enduring love that somehow we have the incredible opportunity to participate in. In 1 Corinthians 13 that Jenny read a moment ago, it picks up, the Apostle Paul does, picks up on this Psalm 42, resilient hope, and Psalm 103, the steadfast love of God that is from everlasting unto everlasting, and starts out in 1 Corinthians 13 saying, you can be as eloquent as the angels. You can be as smart as Einstein. You can have all the wisdom and power and wealth, but if you don't have love, if you haven't allowed yourself to love and to be loved, to know and to be known for who you are and who the people around you are, then you have missed the very reason God made you. Now, this is the way it starts. If you don't have love, you've got nothing. And then there's this middle section that's so beautiful in its simplicity. It's practical. It's, as my father used to say, it's where the rubber hits the road. There's a whole bunch of phrases. There are a whole bunch of phrases that tell us what love is not. They're just two little words that tell us what love is. This amazingly eternal connection with God makes us loving in this way, to be, did you hear the words? Patient and kind. Now, thankfully, our society is filled with patience and kindness right now. In fact, all of us need to go from here and say, y'all, by the way, y'all is such a great word. It's a Southern ability to use the second person plural in creative ways. But you know what the plural of y'all is? All y'all. So all y'all need to be a little more patient and kind. Why? Because all of us have access to and are called to be participants in the love of God that comes as a free, abundant gift. Now, if you just buy into this, if you participate in it, it gives you a little more patience and a little more kindness that we need so much in our world today. The problem is, we can accept the fact that we are loved and can be loving. But with the psalmist in Psalm 42, the way that psalm is constructed, it's clear. He, like we, feels so small and insignificant. And the problem with so many of our lives is we just feel like we have so little power, so little ability to make a difference. It's one thing to love and to be loved. It's a whole different thing to feel like there's nothing I can do with the love that I feel. Somehow Jesus understands how difficult this can be. And Jesus stood in front of a group of people just like you and me, regular folks, and said these amazing words. You are the light of the world. Which to them, I'm sure, made no sense, because for most of them, all their lives, they had been told, you are nobodies. You're nothing. You're too small. But Jesus said, No, you've got something in you that's very special. God's love makes all things good and bright and beautiful and important. You are the light of the world. And we didn't know it as little kids, but we learned a song that tells this amazing truth. And it's a song that I think emerges right out of Jesus' reminder that life can be hard and yet you are the light of the world because God's love lives in you and you have a chance to be full participants in it, through it, and with it. So this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, and so are you, and we're going to sing it now. So let's stand together and sing and know that God's love working in and through you. You got our song as a backup, so don't worry about not being able to sing well. When you sing, you're free. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, as we continue to stand, thank you for your voices, for your smiles, for your rhythm. Let us share just two verses of our hymn of response. If you've been moved today and would like to become a part of this church family or accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, we want to welcome you at the front. Let us sing together these two verses.